Hey everybody, and welcome back to This Moment, your transatlantic bridge connecting Stockholm, Sweden to Harlem, USA. And as always, it is a pleasure and a joy to be in conversation with my dear brother, co-host and chef extraordinaire, chef and beyond, Marcus Samuelson. And today, as we get near Thanksgiving, it's a big day for This Moment. It's a big day for me and the history of This Moment, because today's special guest is the most special guest I could ever have on this podcast, because we're talking about the woman that I literally owe my life to, my mother, Elaine Bozak. Mom, welcome to This Moment.
I feel an honor to be invited to participate in this podcast.
Yeah, exactly, because you're not only my mom. I mean, of course, you're not only my mom, but you're also one of our core listeners. You're like a true This Moment fan.
Oh, yeah.
Let's dive in.
Let's do it. Let's tune in.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
My mother, Elaine Bozak, living in Lund, Sweden since 1970.
Yeah, officially 1970. I came in 68, but after 3 months I left. In 1970, I said, I'm in like Flynn. I was only going to stay for 2 weeks and I'm still here. Sure.
And how's Lund changed? Has it changed a lot since the late 60s, early 70s?
It has. I think there are a lot more students. There's a lot more housing going up everywhere.
But okay, your first impression when you did arrive in Lund the first time, 1968?
Well, I thought it was kind of a cool town because the Black Panthers were taking over Akademiska Föreningen and the student
which
union.
Which is the student
they
union.
They were on the roof and I thought, I come to the right place. This is it.
Yes.
I always wanted to be a Black Panther. Unfortunately, I couldn't join. But
yeah. But you were with them in solidarity at heart.
Yes. I thought it was a very interesting. I didn't speak any Swedish, so of course you're very out of it if you don't speak Swedish. And people were very anti-American, so I tried to play down the fact that I was American because that was the time of the Vietnam War, just the 68, the Vietnam War, and I was active in protests in New York, but. What did they know? You know, people just thought, oh, you're a white American. Oh, you're racist. Well, I said, no, I'm not. You can't prove it to people. You just have to go on living your life and kind of being a regular person, right?
Well, you know that as you're also an avid listener of This Moment.
Yes, I am. I'm up to date.
You're one of our, you're part of our core audience, Mom, which is fantastic. I don't take that at all for granted just because I'm your son. No, not at all. I mean, I take it if the content that we were doing wasn't interesting to you, you wouldn't be listening. But since you are a core listener, you know that we keep circling back to our like kind of what core interests and passions, which is food and music. And speaking of when you came to Lund, the first time in 1968, when you moved to Lund in 1970. Tell us a bit about what the food, like the food must have been very different for you. Like what were your early food experiences moving to this distant land more than 50 years ago?
I came from New York in 1968. I just said, I cannot live there. All the shops closed Saturday, 12, 1 o'clock, that was it.
You cannot live in Lund, you mean? You cannot.
I missed going to the shop. So they had a place called Entree, which was full of vending machines. So I vended milk, I vended cheese, and I vended bread and sort of lived off that because I always missed the shops. I came from New York.
You could shop anytime.
Shop in the middle of the yeah. But when I was invited to people's houses for dinner, it was there was something that they were very fond of, like a la daube, you know, this like plastic. And it's like
it's a, like a gelatin. It's a jelly, right? That you put savory stuff in.
Yeah, it could be fruit or it could be savory. And I didn't like the consistency of it. I thought it was kind of weird. But of course, you learn traveling around the world to eat things and not insult people, and then take a big clunk of wine to wash it all down.
But then
also, people sat at a table and you had your bottle of wine you brought with you. And that's the one you drank out of.
Yeah.
Okay, so you didn't like share a bottle of wine.
No, I forgot to go to the Systembolaget. So I'd say to people, hey, could I have a glass of wine? And they were like, where's your bottle? And I said, I forgot. I didn't know.
Yeah, exactly.
So I didn't get the memo.
Yeah, crazy. I didn't get the memo, right.
And what about the holidays? You know, not just Thanksgiving. Like, what was, you know, like when they're big American holidays, how would you get the food for that? How would you prepare it? Or did you just, you know, what holidays did you start to follow in the 60s? Swedish holidays or Americans?
I was only for 3 months in the 60s. I came in November and I left in November, December, end of January. I said, that's it, going back to New York. Can't take this. But, you know, there was nothing wrong with it. I thought it was exciting. But when I came back in 70, it was August. It was bright outside. Someone got me in a weaving class. I was weaving rugs and blankets and all kinds of stuff that was really fun with like Mexican colors. And all these little old ladies were saying, ooh, we like those colors. You know, it was really shocking to them. And I didn't know what I was doing, but I just liked color and activity, things going on. But and I didn't start celebrating any sort of activity. You couldn't get, where are you going to get a turkey?
So you couldn't celebrate Thanksgiving with the traditional food anyway.
No, and when we did start with a group of American friends, when we did start, you went to the States in the summer and you loaded your suitcase with cranberry sauce and with cornmeal, and you had to plan everything.
It's the story of immigrants worldwide. It's like
right, you couldn't get cranberries here. You couldn't get turkey. Eventually we've got to the country and find out Halloween, you couldn't find pumpkins. How are you going to make your pumpkin pie? We had loaded it up with candied yams in the can because there were no sweet potatoes here.
Yeah.
Wow.
You had candied yams. You had your canned cranberry sauce. You had your cornmeal. You had your spices, your pumpkin pie spice and everything. Suitcase.
But you couldn't bring turkeys with you though.
No, you couldn't bring turkey.
Is it deep in the 70s or early 80s when you started to get easier to get ingredients? When did you feel like, okay, doing Thanksgiving dinner is not, you don't have to start planning it in August?
probably towards the end of the 80s, more and more. But then we were a crew of about 8 people who were bringing the stuff in, finding out which farmer had pumpkins, which farmer had, but I was never into this pumpkin pie, buy your pumpkin, cut it in half, roast it in the oven, peel it, scrape out the seeds, mash it up. No, that was like over the, a little bit.
You like to buy the one in the can still.
I like to cook. I love food, but I'm a bit of a lazy cook.
But you make a mean sweet potato pie though, Mom.
I can make a sweet potato pie. Yeah, and I can make a shepherd's pie. I can make all that stuff. But, you know, when I feel like it.
No doubt. No doubt. You should only cook when you feel inspired. Well, you know.
So Jason, how was Thanksgiving in your house? Like, tell us from your child memories. How do you remember?
Well, I remember
bigger than Christmas.
I remember that my dad started doing Thanksgiving Day dinners in the 80s, and they quickly kind of erupted. Like a few years after he had done the first one, there were so many people. There were like 60 people invited.
Wow.
So, and it would be potluck, and it was a whole big, like, so many people involved, and it was like just this whole big machinery. He'd rent this big kind of communal space in the neighborhood where we lived, where my mom still lives.
It was called the White House. Yeah,
well, it was called the pub at Östratorn, Genghis Khan. And then I would say kind of the food, the quality of food, of course, drops the more people you're cooking for. So I remember one Thanksgiving, it was like turkey, gravy, mashed potatoes, and like these, you know, like the pre-cut frozen vegetables, like the carrots, green beans, and peas for everyone. So I wasn't too, I my interest in Thanksgiving Day food kind of dropped, but I had a lot of fun because I'd meet lots of other American and English speaking kids. I mean, basically it wasn't just American, it was people from the whole world. You had North Africans, Indians, you know, South Africans, everybody was coming through. So it was just a lot of fun. It was like a, it was more like a party than like a family.
It was a lot of fun, but I
but
remember
standing. After that year, I think he was so beat that then we went back to doing it like smaller family style.
Not only that, Jason, after there was one when there were about 50 people and I was plating the food, standing in this booth, plating the food. Somebody was cutting stuff up. I was plating the food, giving it to people. I served so many. I didn't even get any turkey that year.
No, it was like a soup kitchen almost. But it went back to mom. You took it over, and you and your friends would deal with it. And it was, you know,
Carol and I took it over.
Stop. You were taking over Mama Duku Thanksgiving. I feel like that's not right.
No, I think he was happy about
Thanksgiving.
Mama Duku Thanksgiving. He never did any of the cooking. He had English International and he had Val Johnson doing a turkey and this other one doing. There were like four or five people doing turkeys.
He was the CEO. He was the Thanksgiving Day CEO, Marcus. So he had people doing all the cooking, but and I think he was quite happy about it.
Yeah, none of us. We had big Halloween parties too, but none of us wanted to continue, and that it was too much. So then I got together with my home girls and started. Let's have a smaller thing where we can really eat a lot of turkey and a lot of stuffing
and just cook good food. Cook really good food.
But I got questions. Are we dark meat or white meat? Because this is a big, do we brine, do we not brine? Like, I want to know the details here.
We were in advance. We did not brine.
Okay.
Never brine. And it was a whole turkey, so you had dark meat, white meat. Yep. My kids preferred white meat. What can I say? Montebuco liked the leg, you know. So whenever
You don't have to tell me what the boss liked. I knew where he would go. I'm also not sure if there's ever been a choice between white. Yeah. No.
One of the main things that always happens on Thanksgiving is that dad would come in and you guys would have saved the neck and you'd fry up the neck for
the
dad. And the first thing he'd eat is just the neck, no salt, no pepper, no nothing, just the neck. And I think that's one of the high points of his Thanksgiving.
Course.
And that's only for him too.
And the liver, but I was always making a broth with all that stuff because you have to broth to moisten the stuffing. And but then we advanced to Jamie Foster Brown.
Yeah, my auntie, Marcus knows her.
Cornbread stuffing. My God, that's the best, cornbread stuffing. And then Carol Gillis gave me a recipe for yam. You know, it comes from someone called Senator Russell in Savannah, Georgia, via Mary Bloomberg, who was studying archaeology in Stockholm, and Carol Gillis, who was studying archaeology in Lund. And then it came to Elaine, who said, there's too much butter and sugar in this recipe. We got to change it. So
what was the recipe for? It was just for candied yams?
Yam casserole with marshmallows on the top.
Or
Senator Russell liked pineapple on the top, and I was like, no. So it became, Carol said, we'll do a crumble instead. So we did
nice that. Sophisticated
Very but she liked all the butter and sugar, and I was trying to get a little bit healthy there, so that's where I evolved with the orange juice and orange zest and nutmeg and cardamom, you know, more of the savory spices.
Well, now we're getting ahead of ourselves here, so tell us about the invention that the dish that you then invented, I guess.
I've got the original recipe for the yam souffle.
So it became, yam souffle.
Can we get a tea up? Come on now. Come on. I'm like, so where did we go from Senator to
Senator
yam souffle?
Russell had probably the pineapple and or the marshmallows. And we decided that was just too sweet, you know. Senator Russell, I think, was from Savannah, just someplace in the South, a white senator. And he was making his
Well, we can assume that somebody else might have been doing the cooking for Senator Russell. I don't know this as a fact, but we could assume that that's the case.
His recipe came to Mary Bloomberg, who lived in Savannah. Yeah. And she brought it with her to Sweden. when she married, her name was something besides Bloomberg. She studied archaeology, and that's how Carol met her. This recipe traveled around and went through many changes till it got to me, and I just said, we're going to really tweak that to the last minute. It ended up I was making four or five of these different dishes for every party because we divided all the food up. So we got to be about
So what we're talking about is that you invented the sweet potato souffle. I didn't know that.
I didn't invent it.
Oh, you didn't invent it.
No.
His recipe was vastly different from yours, it seems.
Vastly different. It's a basic thing. Sweet potatoes, buttermilk, sugar, blah, blah, eggs, vanilla extract. And I just tweaked it more. I mean, this is what you do with recipes. You know, you're a cook, Marcus. That's what you do. I was watching a program about Georges Balanchine, the ballet director. And he was talking about how you have a choreography and you teach the choreography of something. But there can come a dancer who's just, and she tweaks that dance. She adds some other gesture or another flip or turns her foot a different way. Then they go, wow, what did you do there?
Well, that's one of the wonderful things about cooking is that two people can cook the same recipe and it'll taste different because there's that room for expressing who you are. It's like how we dress, you know, it's like there's room in the everyday to express who you are. And I think that's what I love about cooking, actually. You know?
What I love about this story, Elaine, is that this is how immigrants deal. Yes. You're basically doing a reverse Thanksgiving, right? Like when I came to the States, right, not growing up with Thanksgiving, this is exactly how our Thanksgivings were with my chef friends. They either came from out of state or from different countries. So everybody used to bring, you know, the West African brought their jollof rice, you know, the Swedes brought their herring or whatever, the Puerto Ricans brought their pernil. And every now and then, of course, there was turkey at the table, but turkey was never really the center of the table for us because we didn't grow up with it.
Yeah.
But this immigrant story, this is exactly how immigrants sort of celebrate their holidays throughout the world.
Exactly.
There's always one that starts it, owns it, and then the community gets to it. Then very often, just like it gets too big because people get so excited, and then you got to break it up, and then new recipes are developed. So it's a beautiful immigrant tale, this inland.
And that's what's happening on Sunday. I turn 80, the 21st of November.
Big up. Well done. Yeah.
And I'm having a birthday party out in Lomma, outside of Lund, with a few of the original Thanksgiving people, but we're not calling it Thanksgiving. It's I want to eat turkey. So we're doing, and I'm
it's
having
a turkey dinner.
I want a turkey dinner, having it catered by Kimberly Wiltshire, who is a fantastic American cook from California. You got to meet her one day.
Yeah. Mark,
he's really
good. I love
good.
That.
She does a mean taco with carnitos and stuff. She could work at your taqueria. She's really good.
Yes,
anyway,
yes.
She got to put a plug for Kimberly. She's catering the whole thing. So I can just for one sit back. She's got all the recipes. She makes her own cranberry sauce from
fresh it'll be
cranberry.
The first Thanksgiving where you're not doing any cooking. Well, it's not a Thanksgiving. It's a turkey dinner.
It's a birthday dinner, but I want turkey.
Can I ask you, Elaine, did the lingonberry ever come in as a substitution for the cranberry, or they're a completely different thing?
Oh, yes, it did, many times. Yeah. But, you know, people kind of dissed it and said, where are the cranberries?
It's not the real deal. But it does, I mean, it's similar enough, I would say.
Yeah.
Right?
Jason,
yeah.
Did you bring cranberry, cans of cranberry? I have, yes. Okay.
Yeah. So we're still, Marcus, as you know, I was just in New York, and that was on, one of the orders was, canned cranberry sauce. But I will say this, Mom, it was hard to find canned cranberry sauce in the States that didn't contain high fructose corn syrup. But I did in the end find some organic kind that had real sugar.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Can I go off topic before we go back to Thanksgiving? Because Elaine, I think it's so rare that we have you with us here. But one major news that we can talk about, and I know it's a big deal in Sweden, but also everywhere else in the world, maybe not in the United States as much, but the comeback of ABBA.
Very good reviews took what? In the newspaper. Very good reviews. I haven't heard their new album.
But were you ever into ABBA?
Not really, but I love, of course, Mamma Mia and the films. I just love all of that stuff. I came out singing the songs and dancing the dance at the movie theater with Anya. We, of course, we just loved it. But not a big fan, no. I have to tell you, at Sparta in the 70s, I saw Santana.
Exactly.
I got to go backstage with them because we said we're American. We got to go backstage. They invite us to a big party of drinking and smoking and stuff. And I said, no, I'm going to bicycle home. But everybody else went to the party. I thought,
wow, that's how you choose to tell that story. If we bring up your girlfriend here, we might be another story that we're going to leave that alone. We're going to let you have that.
Yeah.
But for me, that's the truth. I was always so impressed with ABBA. For me, it's like musically, it's just like not necessarily fully my bag. But I just thought it was so incredible that something out of Sweden could be worldwide.
Yes, that's
And
true.
Then on top of that, when I came to New York, that the Broadway musical Chess and Mamma Mia was on forever. And as a Swede, the magnitude of ABBA operating on a world stage, that was actually sparked to me. That's like, wow, this shit is possible. You can come from here.
Yeah.
And make it not just in like in a big in a Swedish sense, but like actually and not understanding what all that meant. And I remember being a kid watching that ABBA performed either before Earth, Wind & Fire, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever, right? Anyone who performed before Earth, Wind & Fire, I was up. Mm. I was watching this thing, and I was like, bah, bah, bah. I was like just into Earth, Wind & Fire and Bob and all that stuff. But the magnitude of their journey is incredible. And there's,
The craftsmanship that went into the writing and arranging and production of those songs. It's like the highest order, undoubtedly. Then... for me, the same way, ABBA's music has never really meant anything to me. But yes, it is impressive that...
This is impressive as Björn Borg, a little Swedish guy who comes up and is like the world champion too. I mean, you have
But I think ABBA's bigger. It's bigger, longer. Like they took a 40-year break.
I think ABBA is Zlatan is the only one who's probably gotten even close to ABBA. I would say, you can go anywhere in the world and say the name, and people know who you're talking about. I think it's actually only ABBA, Zlatan, maybe IKEA. You know, and IKEA is only in the global north. That's only in the.
I would keep ABBA above all that because I think about this, right? To deal with Broadway, what musical band, not even the Beatles, have done Broadway? Like those are completely different arena.
That's true.
You know? And I will say, like, if you listen to a Gaga song, right? For me, it's all ABBA underneath that. It's all ABBA
samples. It's definitely there.
And so I'm just impressed with the journey and the commitment to music. Like,
that's interesting,
You know?
But I'd like to know what they were listening to. Because I'm sure that Benny Anderson was bumping Earth, Wind & Fire and a lot of other African American music, and was like, how can I make this in a Swedish, with a Swedish twist?
Yeah. And also they have, for me also, what conceptually the clothing was always like, there was a thing, you know, when you watched
the clothes,
I was like, that was definitely Earth, Wind & Fire and all of those things. Yeah. So it was a whole show. I was like, whoa, what is this? But I just think anyone who can have a hit in the early 80s and then come back 40 years later and still be number one, that's incredible. It's very, very impressive.
But now you see, Marcus, I'm a little older than you, so for me it was the Beatles. The first time I heard them, I was sitting in a little Nipa hut, a grass hut in a little village in the Philippines, listening to Radio Luxembourg on the shortwave radio, and I heard "I Want to Hold Your Hand," and I said, "Oh my God!" And I sang that song and I played it and that was my song, and followed the Beatles in Manila, their first movies and things, because I identified a lot more with them. Sort of, I was kind of a working hippie, I suppose. I always had a job, had money, but I just really loved their music, their ideas. If Lennon were alive today, I'm sure he would have been a rapper also, because he was always developing.
Wow. Yeah. That's an interesting.
He was my hero.
Lennon, it's interesting you say that because, that's why I've told Jason this story. When Lennon died, our song teacher, she cried, and, we had to learn about John Lennon. And my mom was upset about that because when Bob died, the teacher didn't cry. And we didn't have to learn about Bob Marley. So mom threatened to come back to school.
And it was
How come? What's up? What's going on here?
Why are you crying for Bob?
Why didn't you cry for Bob? When I hear about John, I always think about that.
That's like the title of another book. What about Bob?
Yes.
What about Bob?
Yeah, I love that. I love that about your mom, Marcus, that she always stood up for, and just like mom,
Huge conversations at the household. They didn't want to talk about drugs, right? But you get it. You're a teenager, and then they were like, so she was so upset that Bob Marley was not allowed to perform in Sweden. I think he did a gig in Stockholm, and then he wasn't allowed because they were smoking weed. Mm-hmm. But like Rolling Stones and all the other bands, that everyone knew that they flew in the drugs before. And my mom was so upset about this. And it was
Santana was doing that way back in the 70s, for God's sake. They were Sony Maroney, playing limping. My God, that's why I didn't go backstage, wouldn't go to the party.
Well, we don't know
that story.
That's we need to investigate and get a couple of other witnesses.
All the people who were there, they're not around anymore, so they can't say.
Last witness around. Yeah.
Got my own filter. Gotta have my own filter.
This is how your mom, Marcus,
Anne-Marie
reminds me of you, Mom, because the last time I met Anne-Marie was the opening night of the Clarion Hotel in Gothenburg, and Marcus has this fantastic restaurant there. You were there, your wife was there. It was just thousands of people. I was performing, and it was like 12:30 at night or something, or 1 o'clock, 1 a.m. And who's out there almost at the front of the, like right in front of the stage with her walker, one hand on the walker, the other hand in the air, getting down. Yeah. Anne-Marie Samuelson was there getting down, and we had such a good time, Oh my god. Yeah. It sounds like you two, if you would have met, you would have had a lot to talk about and a lot of common ground. I'm sure of that.
I feel that I've met her because I know Marcus, so I mean, that's my privilege. But I remember being at one of the concerts at Lund's Carnival, and I was in the front.
I told Marcus about that too. Yeah.
It was really, I was suffocating. I said to the guards.
So I come out on stage and I see my mom all the way at the very front. And there's like, I don't know, 8,000, 10,000 people.
Yes.
And you're like waving hands in the air. And I'm like, okay, great. This is a little, you know, you kind of become that little boy again, a little embarrassed, you know, like in front of my mom. But then again, it's fine. And I see you having a good time. And then as the performance intensifies, all of a sudden I see my mom's being squeezed against the fence, you know? And so then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, okay. Now I can't like concentrate on the show anymore. I'm like, mom, what, you know, why'd you, you're at the, this is not that long ago. You must've been at least, you were 70. Yeah, 70 something. And then the security has to rescue you. I see them carrying mom out and I'm like, okay, what do I do? Do I have to like leave the show now and make sure my mom is all right? I'm like, what's going on?
You did not miss a beat. You did not miss a beat.
No, but this was going on in my head. I was very concerned and also a little kind of like, okay, I got to have a talk with you. Like next time you don't stand at the front of a concert.
That was Vanilla Close's fault. She wanted to, because she couldn't see well. She wanted
to
go up to the front.
I know.
So then I said to the guards, okay, you have to take my friends over too. So they lifted all the other. We had a good time backstage. Much better.
Yeah.
Listen, I just think that stories like this are just like, it's so important to hold on to. And I always say this to my friends, no matter what you argue with your parents, whatever back and forth, enjoy the argument because, you know, when they're not there anymore, you're going to miss them so much. So I just love you rock, you rock all the way up, mom, all the way, you know, let them carry you out.
Yeah, yeah, you're welcome anytime, mom, to stand at the front.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're right, Marcus.
Did your father ever give you shit for spitting in Swedish? Obviously, because he's such a sort of lyricist with English. So he's like, Jason, you need to do this in English? Or what did he say?
No, I think when I switched to starting to rap in Swedish, he was still not really on board with me.
With that
I had chosen to do this. I don't think he really took it seriously as this is what I'm going to dedicate my life to doing. So I don't think he was really paying attention at that time.
But as an author,
when are you going to get a job, Jason?
Well, basically, writing the book was a big deal. Yeah. But that's many years later. So 16 years later, writing the book was a big deal. But then what was the real big thing was when I did the stage performance of A Drop of Midnight.
Sure.
And you were both there. Mom, you were there. Dad was there at the opening. Mm. That's when I really think that something beautiful landed there, at least with him. I mean, mom, you've been my fan since day one. Marcus, if it wasn't for Elaine Bozak, my mother here, who 1999 lent me 25,000 crowns so that me...
It's a lot of money.
Me and Mons could print up 500 vinyl records of an EP we had made. We printed up 500 vinyl records. We sold them. I got money to pay back my mom and to print 500 new ones. And that's how we started the record label Juju Records, which then was where I released Botten is Nåd, Alla vill till himlen, everything, you know. Mom, I've said this to you before. I could say it here on the podcast. You know, I'm so grateful for you. And you did it without blinking an eye. You said, sure, you want to borrow the money? Here you are. Mm-hmm. I feel very privileged that you had the possibility of lending me that money.
I had just sold a horse, so I had the money.
And also that you believed in me in that way.
The belief, you know? That's the point. You know, that's really, for me, it's amazing. And you're the true executive producer. You're the true Quincy.
Exactly.
You know, but you were even cooler than Quincy because you went independent. You know, you went independent. So it's really
when Basic told me, I'm dropping out of university because the music is burning inside me, and I can study when I'm in my 50s, but I can't start rapping then. And I just said, okay, how can I help? That's the best thing a parent can say. How can I help? Wow. And it doesn't necessarily mean monetary, but it's like, you know, what are we going to do here?
So, well, I mean, you believed in me before I had an audience, before I had a very, very small audience.
I was your audience when you were singing Santa Claus Don't Fall in the Water. I mean, you were singing from a little kid. So.
We don't have to go all the way back there, but
yeah. We might. Might be a different episode.
we got far away from Thanksgiving, didn't we?
What's going to be on the Thanksgiving table this year, Elaine? What's on the table and who's coming?
I can't tell you who's coming because that's always a secret. The Thanksgiving has been moved to my birthday, so it's the 21st. Yes. It's not the real Thanksgiving. Do you know one Thanksgiving I had when I turned 60? I had an open house at my house. No, when I turned 50, and people brought a live turkey to my apartment.
Yeah.
They brought a live turkey.
What was his name? His name, George? No.
No, I don't know, Sylvia.
Because I remember that my sister was really upset when that turkey eventually was killed and then subsequently eaten.
We never ate that turkey. I couldn't. Okay. You can't name a turkey and then eat it. It lived in the basement, then it was slaughtered, and then lived in the freezer. And then I said, get rid of this turkey. No, I didn't want to eat that turkey.
But so what's on the table? Quick run through before Marcus has to go.
It's going to be, where's my menu here? Turkey, of course, with cornbread stuffing and a separate bread stuffing, maybe under a separate breast. Gravy, mashed potatoes, cornbread, savory cornbread or sweet cornbread. I can't remember what she's making. What else? Then there's going to be a green bean casserole. Don't know what that's about. And for dessert, pecan pie.
Good, nice. That's a new addition. Yeah.
Yes, and a separate order of pumpkin muffins because the kids have like pepperkakor. Yeah, like Swedish pepper cake. Wow. So they'll eat that, and they get Plan B for the young kiddies. It's spaghetti and meat sauce. Because there are a lot of these, and if they turn up their nose at the turkey, they get spaghetti and meat sauce just so they have something to eat, and then ice cream for dessert and pumpkin muffins. So that's
But there might be a birthday cake too, right? There got to be a birthday cake there.
What?
No birthday cake.
That might be out of your, you know.
That might, yeah.
Yeah.
That's might probably be out of my control. Yeah.
Yes.
That's true.
Exactly. Well, Mom, thank you so much for coming on this moment. You know,
I didn't talk too much, Jason.
Oh, that's fine.
I don't feel enough, and I feel like you have to come back.
It's Thanksgiving. You're turning 80. And speaking of, you know, Thanksgiving is also the time to remember and remind oneself and people around you what we're thankful for. And I'm beyond thankful and grateful. I feel blessed to have you as my mother, you know.
Well,
and that you're here. And that we're both still here, all three of us.
We're still standing. Yeah,
Exactly. But I know what I'm going to be thanking. Yeah.
And I can vouch that Elaine is the mayor of Lund. I was in Lund for an hour and a half about 4 or 5 years ago, and she
your schedule was hijacked.
Showed me around, and she showed me around. I was like, you can never have a better host than this. Like, and she knew everybody. Didn't matter if she was 20, the 21-year-old student, or it was like she. I mean, talk about social, you know, like butterfly. You knew everybody, and I was so impressed with it. I told Jason every time. I was like, damn, your mom run that town. You know, she runs that town.
She found out when your event was. She came down to your event and was like, Marcus, you're coming with me. And then it was the coffee shop, the bookshop, the round.
There's the Zoom share where Jason goes to Midnight Mass because he likes to listen to it. But I did get your not your producer, but whoever was with you, your the tour planner of your thing. And I said, well, bring her along too. We're going to have coffee for everybody. Love what are you going to do?
All right, Mom. Well, we'll be back in Lund soon enough. All right, Mom, now you know what I'm thankful for. And that's a pretty, it's a pretty big gratitude. That gratitude is huge, enormous. What are you thankful for, you know, moving into this Thanksgiving?
I'm thankful for many things. Every morning I wake up, I'm thankful that I wake up. I'm thankful for my children, my grandchildren, my life in Sweden. I can walk and talk and breathe and eat and live.
There you go. I hear that and second that. I'm thankful for that too. All right. Well, Mom, thank you so much for coming on the show.
I'll see you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.